University of Alaska had a flight program at that time. Not too many people know that now, but when I came back right after war in 46, I went through the flight program.
Does it have a flight program now?
No, I don't believe so. They might have a few ROTC students yet that in their senior year are eligible, that they're eligible physically, but they can take good up to their private.
I wonder what the reason is, because it would be interfering with the private sector that has flight programs here. Do you know?
No, I don't think that would be the problem. The Army uses pilots, of course, by a great number, and that is an Army ROTC. So I think that they use the flight program. I used to instruct them a little bit years ago to get the students, the senior students, who they know will graduate and become commissioned, through the 40 hours of flight training, and see if they could qualify to become Army aviators. In other words, they can weed them out there for about $800-$900, and things. If they're really good and go through the program, no problem. Well, then they could take them back to the military bases out in the States and really give them advanced training.
Now, you were flying at Weeks Field around 1945 then?
46.
46. Mm-hmm. Tell us what Weeks Field was. Was it the only local strip, other than LAD? Was it the only one we had?
You know, a lot of the listeners, especially all the new people, may not even know where Weeks Field is.
I want to mention that, too. We brushed into the topic many times, and Weeks Field pops up in the news as a possible site for a federal building or a library. But describe it, where it was.
Well, Weeks Field was on approximately 13th Street, I would say approximately. It angled. I think it's the Denali School. Is that the Denali School out there? Am I correct? Well, that would be more or less right in the runway, I'm sure. The tower was located fairly close to where the Cowles and where the Arctic Bull is. Arctic Bull building, if I'm not mistaken, used to be a Pan American building. No. I believe that's correct.
It was a hangar.
Yes, that was Pan Americans at that time. And just towards the east, becoming towards Cushman, the tower was there. And you'd drive right out, I believe it was Turner Street. I believe it was Turner. It'd take you right out to the airport there. They had a little flight school. Dodson was across the runway, if I remember correctly.
Oh, Dodson was there next to Pan American.
Yeah, Gillum was across the runway.
Gillum was
across the runway.
Dodson and Gillum both being bush pilots.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah, operators there. And they had Fairbanks Air Service was down below, I believe, the Pan American building, just below it. They had a kind of a Quonset Hut affair there.
Gee, I wonder if anybody has any pictures.
Ole Grinnell's was at the end of Turner Street there. It was the Alaska Flight School, I believe. That's where I went. And it was kind of a grass, gravel runway.
I got some pictures someplace of some of the hangars and the airplanes that were...
The overall area?
Well, they'd be more local shots, because we stayed at this Artie Bull building when it was a hangar. There was a sort of a bachelor's quarters up there on one edge of it that the single mechanic stayed in, and every once in a while I'd get out on the balcony there and take a picture of, some of our airplanes down in the...
I've got one shot of it that Sam White gave us one night. He was up here doing the show with us, and it shows him, what do you call that plane that... where's a little pin?
OX-5.
And that photo was taken at Weeks Field.
What's an OX-5?
Well, that's a very famous Liberty engine, water cooled. People, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that belong to the OX-5 Club, you had to either fly or work on one part in 1942. I mean, to get into it now. So the people that are in the OX-5 Club now are pretty rare.
That was a fascinating night, too, hearing him talk about flying. Let's get you, Marv, up to the same point. Did you ever work at Weeks Field while it was there?
Yes, when I come up in June of 44.
Now, first of all, where'd you come from?
Oh, I started out in Portland, Oregon. That was my hometown. And I went to a trade school there, received my A&P tickets, or way back then they called them A&E tickets. Now they changed the designation a little bit to cover all the power
plants. What did A&E stand for?
Well, A&E was aircraft and engine. Now it's A&P for aircraft and power plant. The power plant theoretically takes in the turbine engine that way.
Did you begin as an aircraft mechanic? Was that your first job?
Yes, that's what I started at. Right after I got out of school, well, I had worked a couple other places outside, but then when I come up here, it was to be a mechanic for Jim Dodson there at Weeks Field. And as we mentioned before, Pan American was on one side of us, and the...
Are the Dodsons related, like the Jim Dodson who lives here in Fairbanks, a young man, and the Jim Dodson who is with the Air Carriers Association, are they all relatives or not?
Not to my knowledge. I don't really know, but I don't think so.
Didn't you work with Northwest Airlines or something a little bit during the war there?
Well, during the war, yeah, I flew along with them and these C-46s. That's what got me started coming up here in the first place, was riding back and forth between Edmonton, Calgary, and Canada to Fairbanks here with the, well, as a flight engineer with the early C-46s. And well, I saw the country up here and liked it and decided I wanted to get back up here. I was still pretty young and eager then.
And what year did you come to Fairbanks?
June of 44 then.
Any family?
Not then. I mean, I was still single then when I come up here.
And you have a family here now?
Yes, uh-huh. I have a wife and three children now.
What about you, Tommy? I forgot to ask.
No, I have a wife and five children.
The first job that you had in Fairbanks, Marv, was with Dodson at Weeks Field then?
Yes, uh-huh.
And where have you worked since?
Well, when Northern Consolidated, or it was actually Ray Peterson that put the Consolidated thing together, I just stayed on with them, and then from there we bounced around to the different localities wherever they would have maintenance troubles or need extra mechanics. Why, that's where they'd send me, because I was kind of footloose, you know.
Did you get to know Ray Peterson at all?
Yes, just as more a... employer-employee relation rather than, you know, a personal thing.
He's the president of Wing right now.
I know it, and he very rarely speaks to us. That's why I ask. I've never met him personally, but trying to get a story out of him in Fairbanks, you know, for Fairbanks, is like pulling teeth.
No, I wouldn't say that.
Oh.
Back when I had the Arctic Oil Journal, I featured him once in a 5-page interview in my mainstream series.
We've never had any luck with it, nor has the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce getting him to come up and say anything, comment one way or the other. And it's ever since Northern Consolidated really took wing, it's been a pretty much hostile attitude toward news. And I wondered if that characterized him or not. You know, it wouldn't necessarily.
Well, you remember the mainstream series of interviews?
Not offhand.
Well, the Arctic Oil Journal, as you know, published 14 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And we still may come back when things pop up this summer. But anyhow, we had a series in there called The Mainstream, which were a Playboy type of, not like Playboy, but patterned after the Playboy magazine type of interview, where I sat down with a tape recorder and ran a one-hour interview. And I interviewed a different person in every issue, and it was typed up verbatim, only grammatical corrections. Excuse me. And all of it. I interviewed Governor Egan, Senator Stevens, Jim Lundgren here in Fairbanks, people from the state, people in politics, people in industry. And when they were having a lot of talk with the airlines, I decided to interview one of the presidents of the airlines, and I called Bud Agberg and asked him if I could set up one with somebody there. And he said, sure, how about Ray Peterson? I said, fine. And next, made another phone call, set the date, flew down there, and went in and spent a couple hours, did an interview.
Well, that hasn't been our experience or the experience of others recently in Fairbanks. I don't know why. In any event, who else did you work for then, Mark?
Well, from Consolidated, we went through several years with them, and somewhere during this time, I learned to fly myself, and once everybody else seems like, as soon as you get an airplane, you want to get into the air taxi business. Over a period of time, I finally worked into it on a small scale with a float plane. And part of the time when I was flying in the summer, why, I was also working as a mechanic for Mr. Bachner over there at Bachner Aircraft. And from him, why, I come over with Tommy.
How long have you been with Tommy?
We come in 68, 69, winter there of January 15th, I think.
Yeah, January 15th to 69.
But actually, Marv, you're more than just chief mechanic. You're the secretary treasurer of the corporation, aren't you?
Well, this is another one of my titles, yes. I am part of the group.
Let's bounce back now. Tommy, you were flying out of Weeks Field, and take up at that point again, and let's trace your career a little bit from there and get ourselves back to Air North then.
Yeah, we flew off of Weeks Field and got learned to fly there. It was quite a program right after the war. It was a tremendous amount of air activity, the GI Bill and all these people involved. And a lot of them are still here, of course, in Fairbanks flying. But I can remember getting our night time in those days. They had a place called the Talk of the Town. I don't know if I've ever heard of that one sometime.
No.
Well, Talk of the Town was quite a nightclub in those days. I'd saw this on the floor. It was quite a place. Really real watering trough. There was one.
Where was this at?
I was about roughly. It was between Cushman and Turner. I would say about opposite where the Alaska National Bank Airport Road Branch is, right in that area. And they had a string of lights. Oh, it must have been 50 to 100 feet long. I can't remember how long, but just a bunch of lights up in the air between two poles, a bunch of light bulbs on, kind of light up the place. You come in, the land, dark, and you just lined up with those lights, right on top of those lights, but right on the end of the, right on the end of the runway there. It really put her in there.
It's almost like it used to be at your field. Many's the time, back when in 68, 69, when the big push was going up with North Slope, I used to fly a lot up there with Fort Yukon Flying Service, Tommy's planes then, because he was, I think any given day, he had two planes at Prudhoe Bay for a couple of years. And when we came back to Fairbanks at night, they used to have three or four pickup trucks parked along the end of the runway with their headlights shining down the field. This was our landing lights.
Remember, the FAA's listening to this.
Statute of limitations. Well, anyhow.
Just what we call Metro Field.
Well, we won't say where that was.
No, that's all right.
Anyhow, right now, of course, the field has complete runway lights.
Well, who started up Metro Field?
It was done by Gem Company, and they still actually own it, although we operate it for them.
Who presently operates out of Metro?
Merrick and ourselves. And we paved it this past fall, and we got standard airport lighting the whole length of it, nearly a mile long. So,
well, going back to Weeks Field, was it the only field at that time in Fairbanks for private use?
Yes, I believe it was. I can't recall any other. I'm trying to think about
it. Oh, Pan American landed there, and I come the first time on Canadian Pacific out of Vancouver, and we landed there too.
What was the next trip that we had? Would it be Phillips?
Yes, Phillips Field, 1951. The city kind of wanted to take over the property where Weeks Field is now, or through expansion, and it's probably a good thing. There was an awful lot of homes built up around it. And at that time, Mr. Bachner and Holly Evans, Jeff Bachner and Holly Evans, you've heard of both of them, they're pretty famous in the air industry here. Got some property where Phillips Field is now, and they, I think at their own expense, put that runway in there, and it was, I believe it became usable in 51. It's kind of a long time ago, but that sounds about right. And they closed Weeks Field at that time, then they started putting this housing in there, right around 10th, 11th Street, right in there. You go out, that's all in the Weeks Field area.
Well, what we know is Fairview
Manor.
What was that?
That's Weeks Field.
That would have been part of Weeks Field also.
Oh, yeah.
And that housing first went in as, it wasn't apartments for civilians, then it was something else, wasn't it? Or did it?
No, I think that was strictly a civilian.
It was
operation.
Civilians. It was just patterned and built after the military format. But it wasn't a was civilian from the beginning.
Somebody told me differently once, and I was confused on that. Who did you go to work for then, Tommy, or did you always work for yourself?
Well, I worked for myself up until 1950, I believe it was 57. Then I went to work for Holly Evans at Fairbanks Air Service at Felt Field, and I was with him for about 10 years.
And then you put something together of your own?
Yes, right. We put Ron Clem, who's the vice president of the company, isn't here tonight, he's flying, but him and I started putting the air service together, and then Fort Yukon Air Service in Fort Yukon, the owner of that was Mr. Fairchild. We got together in fall of 67 there. The fall, we put all our talents together and just kept going ever since.
In the fall of
67.
Fall of 67.
Yes.
Sonny?
You have a caller on the line, Larry.
Good evening, Beeline, you're on the air.
Yeah, Larry, can I talk to Tommy a minute?
Sure.
Yeah, it's Tommy, go ahead.
Yeah, Tommy, this is Despain. Say, what was the that bakery that was just across Turner Street on the end of the runway there on the east end of the Weeksfield runway? They used to have some poles or something sticking up there. I remember we used to have to kind of sideslip a little bit to get by them or something if we was coming in for the end of the field. You remember that bakery right on the end of the, it was across the street, of course, the Turner Street run up along the end of the runway there.
Yeah, I can't remember that. You don't remember,
Mark? I remember a little bakery there, but I don't talk about
it. Yeah, it was the only bakery in town at the time.
Yeah, so long ago, Glenn, I can't quite remember. I remember that.
I remember the lights at the talk of the town, but that was quite a little while after after that. The talk of the town wasn't there until in the 50s.
Oh, it was there before that. Those lights on the talk of the town were there in 47.
Don't bet any money on it, Tommy.
I'm pretty sure they were. Somewhere right in there. Yeah.
Just don't bet any money on it.
Well, they might not have been there quite that early, but they were there.
Bill Grayson, that had Central Supply, he's the one that christened that thing the talk of the town and put all those lights up there, and that was quite a little bit after 47, 48.
Yeah.
I was flying off in Weeksfield there in 47, 48, and it was several years after that, after I'd got into the plumbing business for myself, and I went into business for myself in 50, that the talk of the town went in there.
Yeah, well, you have to remember that the airport was closed there in 51. Weeksfield was closed in 51, and Felt Field was open, and the International Airport came in, about that time, too.
Yeah, well...
I can't remember just the years.
Really doesn't matter, but it was in that vicinity sometime, yeah.
Yeah, right.
I just wondered if you remembered the bakery.
I remember the little bakery there, but
right on the end of the runway.
I was single and footloose there, and I wasn't too interested in bakeries in those days. I liked
to
fly
and chase girls. What were you interested in at that time, Tommy?
Airplanes and girls.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I might as well be honest about it.
Yeah, well, sure, it's just as well.
Yeah,
I couldn't listen to the conversation. There's very many people around that remember those things.
Now, we know that Glenn wouldn't have anything to do with it. Racing around
with bakeries.
Okay, Glenn.
Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
I didn't even know that Glenn flew. Goes to show. You haven't talked with him.
Well, there are some stories
that
around town.
I knew
about
that. I knew Glenn flew. I didn't know he had an airplane, though.
I thought he just collected money. I wasn't aware of anything else.
Well, that's how the bakery came in. He was interested.
We're talking
all
a long time ago, you know.
What kind of, yes, Sonny?
That was the Patty Cake Bakery.
The Patty Cake Bakery, we're informed by a caller.
Oh, really? Right.
You don't remember the Patty Cake Bakery?
No, I don't remember the name, no.
Tommy was playing Patty Cake at the talk of the town.
Talk of the town. Glenn was over at the bakery, all right.
Looking for dough.
You may leave the room.
That's a terrible pun. Our guests are Tommy Olson, he's the president of Air North, formerly Fort Yukon Air Service, and Marv Jones of Air North is chief mechanic, and Stu Rothman is here. He's been handling PR for Air North. And Let's talk a little bit about what you have at Air North right now in the way of aircraft and personnel. You told me when I talked to you earlier, Tommy, that you have, 28 people with Air North.
Yeah, we have 23 full-time and some part-time, yes. 23 full-time at present time. We have 10 pilots on the line right now, and day after tomorrow there'll be 12. We have two more coming back on the line day after tomorrow. And we have ground crew and office crew, of course. But we also operate out of Fort Yukon. We have quite a establishment in Fort Yukon also. It's, in fact, we have cargo there, terminal. All the facilities run an fixed base operation right at Fort Yukon. In fact, they're better set up than we have at Metro right at the moment.
Hmm.
You know,
for cargo, that is.
Yeah, for cargo.
For cargo.
Handling passengers, you know. But we, right now, we're Alaska Architectural, Lee Link here, is just finishing the blueprints on a new terminal building, which we'll be putting in, hopefully, in the next couple months at Metro, which will be able to handle up to 100 passengers at one time.
Hmm.
We fly quite a few people every day.
What kind of aircraft do you have?
Well, most of our... We have 13 aircraft active right at the moment, and we have two more coming in from Alaska Airco. That's John Hajdukovich here at Phillips Field. We have two more 207s on order. One should be in this coming month, another one in June. But we're restricted to under 12,500 pound takeoff weights on airplanes. This is part 135. So we have four aircraft that carry 10 passengers at a time. If we go larger than that, then you're required to carry a co-pilot if you exceed over 10 passengers. And right now it's not feasible to try to get into larger airplanes. It requires certificate changes and everything to do this.
So, Sonny?
Shall I break now or would you like a question?
Toss the question in, then break.
A caller asks if you'd tell us who ran the talk of the town.
I don't know.
Apparently there are a lot of people out there who know an awful lot about the talk of the town and the patty cake bakery. I don't really...
advise her to get in touch with Glenn and say...
Yeah, I think Glenn was probably a little right about the talk of the town a little later than I'm thinking, because as I recall, you had to be 21 to get in there, so it must...
Well, I understand it was a politician who operated it.
Oh, you know in there...
No, that's I remember Sam White mentioning it. As a matter of fact, I remember him mentioning
that bakery.
Oh, you
mentioned
it
too. Well,
when did the Squadron Club go up?
Well, that Squadron Club,
which Squadron Club?
Well, there was a Squadron Club. You only took the fuselage of a C-46.
That was the first Squadron Club.
And they had it so you'd walk up on a ramp right through the door of a C-46, and they had a bar and everything in there, and it just looked like an airplane parked with the wings off right beside Cushman.
If that fuselage were still there and you had to go through the door of the C-46 to get to the bar, I would never drink at that bar. I vowed that I will never go through the door of a C-46 again. The jumpmaster used to have to use his boot on me, you know, to get me out.
You're a parachutist?
Oh, my golly, that's the most frightening, awful experience.
Larry,
terrible.
I have the news on the talk of the town.
Oh, okay.
Originally, it was Harry Sams.
That's right.
Had it.
Yes, right.
But after that, it was Alec Miller. Alex Miller.
Our Alex Miller or another Alex Miller?
I understand it's the Alex Miller.
Aren't there two Alex Millers around town?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, he just moved so fast.
Yeah.
Possibly so, but I was told that there are two, and... I wouldn't mind having that cleared up also. Sonny?
Well, can we add one more thing to this?
Yes.
It was the Alex Miller who's now in Juneau and who's...
Who was in Juneau.
Who was in Juneau?
Yeah, he's with...
He's expediter.
With Neil Byrd.
Okay, and...
Assistant to the president.
And then after that, it was Phil Grayson.
Oh.
Good heavens, we probably
you realize
more about the talk of the town than you ever knew.
Oh, it's probably... more people, the first time they ever heard of Talk of the Town, you know, that's been a long time ago. So this town's gone quite a way since then.
And I want to learn a little bit of your opinion about that after this, Sonny.
Hello there, Jeffrey.
Our guests are Tommy Olson, he's the president of Air North, Marv Jones, head mechanic for Air North, Stu Rossman, who's handling PR for them. And Tommy says there that the talk of the town hasn't been there for about 20 years, but you have more on it?
Yes, caller said it was a C-54, not a C-46.
For the squadron?
For the squadron.
The squadron crew was a C-46 because the nose of it was borrowed on a C-46, got tipped up on his nose up north here, and they took the nose off of that C-46 that put on one of the companies that went off up there. I mean, it was definitely a 46.
Hmm.
No question about that. Now, that's on the Quadrant Club is up here on Cushman Street.
Caller also commented that behind it there was a two-story log cabin where the girls worked.
Yeah, those were taxi dancers. that's right. You know, caller's got a good memory. Yeah, that's right. You know, you go in there and, you know, you find
taxi
you go in there
dancers?
With a doll. Yes.
I shouldn't ask, but what's a taxi dance?
They used to sell tickets off of a roll, just like you're at a raffle or something. No, you buy your little tickets, just like you go in the movies, you know, and they had these little string of tickets. And
have you ever heard the song, Sonny, no. 10 cents a dance?
And those girls were there, and you'd buy these tickets, and you'd go up to a girl with a ticket, she'd take a ticket to dance with you. Yeah, I remember that.
There are three things we want to do here now.
Incidentally, that was owned by Sam Leacock.
The taxi dance.
Yeah.
Well, it was a squadron club.
Before it was the Golden Slipper.
When I came here in 59, there was a squadron club on South Cushman that was run by Lou Gigoletti, Lou and Tony Jeans. And it was right next to, it was about a block outside the city limits. Of course, there were about 20 or 30 bars out there then, the Squadron Club, the Silver Dollar, the Gold Dollar, Timberline. They used to burn one at a time, and the city fire trucks would come to the city limits and watch them burn, and just so the ashes wouldn't come in the city. That's way back when.
Tommy, what flying story have you probably told the most that your friends would groan about, but our listeners would like to hear?
That's kind of hard to say, quite a bit.
Now we know the stories that Larry's told that our listeners groan about.
Stu said you've got to tell one that's that was your toughest one. And I think the probably the toughest one I ever flew was a fellow took a Navy on one time, a little low wing airplane, and landed at Minto. And I believe on takeoff he had probably quite a few more people in it than should have been. And he stalled her out, evidently run her off the runway off the side and tipped upside down in the ditch, you know, alongside the runway over at Minto, and it wiped out the whole top of the airplane, the prop, and damaged the wings very badly. And it was purchased by Paul Hagley Jr., who runs 10-hour taxi now, and Ken Murray Jr., and they bought this thing as is, where is. Well, this was back in about, I don't know, 60, 61, back 12, 13 years ago, I guess. And they wanted to bring this thing to town, and they got it right side up, and got another propeller on it and everything, and would take it off without a canopy on. No windshield, no canopy. It was slid on it, so it was really a mess. And didn't make it off the first time. There was no runway maintenance in the winter time, and they broke the nose wheel off of trying to get her off this time. Another propeller went down the tube. And so finally they got put together, and I told them I'd bring it in for $100.
Flat. Pretty tough. I did. I took off, went over there, and...
Hold it a second. We lost a mic for some reason. Say something again there, Tommy.
Yeah. You hear me?
Flip yours over there. He's on two now.
Yeah. So how's that doing, all right?
Yes.
By the way, we took off, and... I got the thing airborne, all right, and I had goggles on, you know, the typical old, really doing an open cockpit job on that one. No windshield, you know, everything whistling by me. You got in the air and it wouldn't climb. Gee whiz, the whole top was off, the canopy was off, and gee, I struggled that rascal through the, around the trees and everything else, and I finally got to Phillips Field there.
You say this was winter?
Well, there wasn't winter when I brought it in. It was winter when they first tried and had another accident on takeoff. It didn't want to fly very good without a top on it. in the windshield. The aerodynamics of the aircraft were just all messed up. The wings were bent, you know, and it was quite a mess.
Tell us another.
Well, that's about the only one that was really a hairy one, so to speak.
Have you ever had a closer call than that? If you're willing to discuss in the air.
No. Yeah, I had one over at college here about Thanksgiving Day one. I never can forget that. I lived that one down. It's had a little problem with the airplane, and I ran into a power line, but nobody got hurt or anything.
George Clayton was here.
Sure delayed my Christmas, or it was Thanksgiving. My Thanksgiving dinner about 3 hours late on account of the current went off. Couldn't cook the turkey.
Yeah, that was 20 years.
One of the longest stories we ever heard, and perhaps one of the most exciting, was when George Clayton was here talking about the wrench up in the landing gear of
F-27.
Yes, of the F-27 at the time, trying to shake it out. What is the toughest part of mechanics work, keeping a small plane, small aircraft going in this kind of weather, Marv?
He's primarily concerned with keeping it warm enough to keep going. You've got to winterize it as per the required manuals to see that the temperatures stay within limits. And as long as you can keep it within its limits and the pilot can hold on to the controls, why, it'll usually go.
Jog your memory back over a few of the years and tell us some of your experiences to sort of stand out in your mind.
Well, there was two of them. One of them was when I was working with Mr. Bachner over there. There was a 180 Cessna that flipped over on its back down at Healy. And I was elected to go down and put enough parts on it and then fly it on back home. Well, when I got down there and decided that we needed the vertical fin and rudder and sent back for that and the prop, but we turned the thing right side up back on its wheels again. And one wing from the strut outboard was rather limp due to the fractures in the spar. So there was a couple of young fellows that worked for the railroad there. They were helping me with whatever they could do. And I told them to go get an axe and go over to the side of the runway there. And we'd chop down two or three of those small spruce trees because they didn't have many others, you know, except the spruce there. So we chopped down two that were about 2 to 2.5 inches in diameter and as long as I could get them. We brought them back over and put the wingtip off, or took the wingtip off, and then we inserted these pieces of tree down through the ribs in the lightning holes. And as soon as you could get them in there as far as you could push them by hand, then you took the end of the axe and you tapped them gently but firmly until they disappeared down into the wing. This was a great stiffener, you see. And, of course, it also made that wing kind of heavy.
You didn't have any wing tanks.
No wing tanks. Well, they didn't go quite that far in. But when the rudder and vertical fin come and we put them on and got the prop installed, and there was some wagering there on the runway as to how far I would get when I took off. As it turned out, at about 72 to 75 miles an hour, it was quite stable. Anything over that, it didn't want to fly too good. But by following the railroad clear on into Weeks Field, we managed to get it home. And then after that, we did some repair work on it.
Sonny?
Caller asked if either of you knew where Tom Appleton might be found, or do you know of him? He was a mechanic for Harold Gillum Sr.
The last I heard, he was down in Anchorage with Bob Reeves or Revolution Airways.
Another caller said very simply, I guess, let's not forget the stampede. Have you forgotten the stampede?
No.
You haven't. All right. Something I wanted to do tonight, too, is I've lived here, you know, just for a very short time, 8 years, and Fairbanks has changed dramatically, and everybody knows my thoughts on it. Each of you has, Tommy, Marv, have lived here. How long have you lived here, Stu?
Going on 15 years now. Just a little bit longer, yeah.
So Marv and Tommy go back 3 decades in Fairbanks. Tell us a little bit about observations you've made about the town over those years and now.
Well, the town, when I first came here in 42 in the Fairbanks, you got out to approximately 10th Street. You're same as going out to about 30th now, getting the same type of country. And the thing that I can remember very well is around, I think between right about 9th Street, I guess. You used to have a mud hole in that thing every spring you could bury a car in. That was one of the real dandies in Cushman Street there, 9th. Well, we thought if you ever get that mud hole fixed up in spring breakups, you could drive through there without getting stuck. Because it was only, we had, road was paid up as far as 4th, I believe, in those days. It could have been the 5th. Right around 4th or 5th.
Cushman was only paved up to there?
Yes, up to 4th or 5th in those days. And it was that way for quite a few years after the war, as a matter of fact. A long time before we got Cushman blacktopped out like it is now. So,
as you watch a town change over 30 years is a generation, what strikes you the most about the change?
Well, you have, you used to know everybody that was in business here. You used to have meat markets on the corner of 2nd. Cushman, you had a livery store there. You had a store across right near where the post office is, now just across the street from it. You used to know all these people. You know, you'd have a couple pool halls in town. You knew everybody. Now it's, you don't know anybody anymore. You can walk down 2nd Street. At least I can. I've been here all this time, and very seldom see somebody you know. Well, I mean, this is not bad, of course, but I mean, that's the most striking thing. You used to be able to know everybody by their first name just about, because the town was very small in those days. It's getting larger. You're getting a lot more cars. You're getting a larger police force. You don't know the police anymore. You just knew all the police in those days. There's only 2 or 3 of them, you know. State policeman, we call it territorial policeman that day, a man named Brandt. Just one in the whole area here. Heck, he took care of the road crew down to Harding Lake and everything around here. Just one policeman. Now you got lots of them. And this is all good, of course, for the population. The university was all wooden buildings except for the Allison building in those days and Harriet Hess Hall. They're only concrete buildings they had then. Now they removed all the old wooden structures and put all new ones in. This is progress.
I ask Mark, what aspect of Fairbanks as it stands today do you like the least?
We like the least?
Mm-hmm.
Gee, I don't know. I like everything about Fairbanks myself. There's nothing really that stands out in my mind that I don't really like about it. It's been my home for so long. Fairbanks is going to certainly have tremendous possibilities. I kind of feel myself that eventually someday it might possibly be the largest city in Alaska. I mean, this is kind of a funny thing to say at this time, but we're right strategically located in the middle of everything. Everything's going to happen. Minerals, west, north, east, everywhere you go. You've got the highway system, we've got the railroad, and we'll be a air hub here someday, too.
There's a good chance you may be right before, before the Second World War, Fairbanks was bigger than Anchorage, right?
Oh, yes.
It's entirely possible that Fairbanks will grow that substantially in population. Do you like that?
Well, it's, I don't dislike it. No, I think it's just a natural thing that's happening. It's, people are staying here. They're all pretty nice people, here in Alaska. They're not as impersonal, say, as you go down to Seattle or some of these other places. They keep coming in here, and people keep worrying about outsiders coming, but actually the people that are coming here and staying around are just like the rest of us, they kind of pioneer type.
I believe that, too. I just can't feel resentful of a person who wants to come up and make it in Alaska. Because that's what I wanted to do since I was 10 years old and finally got around to doing it 8 years ago, and I'd be kind of hypocritical, or unfair if I presented someone else doing it. You did it in 41, and likewise in what, 44 more.
Right. It's hard to say how many people actually want to come here that just haven't made the break yet, actually.
Sure.
That's just all it is.
You look like you wanted to say something.
Well, no, I was just listening. I was going to talking about the past, and you slowly worked up into the future. I'm going to put Tommy on the spot here and offer you something. You're talking about the old stuff. You want to see something new. Why don't you bring Sonny out to Air North, and Tommy could probably give you a ride, or maybe he could set up and take you along on one of the trips to the next one of the villages.
Stu.
Yeah?
Stu. I've never flown.
Well, wait till you hear what I'm talking about. Tommy just got, or Air North just acquired, I should say, his first turbine aircraft that any taxi outfit has. It's the first turbine commander in the state of Alaska, and the first turbo prop thing in the interior that an air taxi outfit has.
Tell me, Stu, does it still go up in the air?
It goes to 20,000 feet in 9 minutes. At a third the speed of sound, and it will reach half the speed of sound.
It's a good reason for not getting into it.
But, Sonny, it has a bar in it. It's completely plush.
I'm usually too sick to drink.
Would you believe this airplane has a picture window on each side? I don't mean the little... I'm serious. You'll have to see this to believe it.
I noticed
they generally blindfold me before I get into the plane.
She has a thing about heights, and also a thing about... tight enclosures. She has a few phobias, Stu. That's the problem.
I'm perfectly willing to go up in a plane. I do it all the time. I just don't. And I used to even like it until I had a bad experience flying into an Alaskan city, and I never quite recovered. I'm almost over it now, though. I didn't bother me to fly last.
Has the city recovered?
That's a nice...
As a matter of fact, no.
But I want to clarify something. They've had turboprop commanders in Alaska before, but not owned by air taxi operators.
That's what I meant.
Yes, not by air taxi operators.
Yeah, this is the first that a private air taxi outfit has.
Is this out at Metro now?
Yes, it is. Well, it was in Kotzebue here when I came here. Mr. Clem was flying over to Kotzebue, and it should be in by now, yeah.
It's quite a changeover. This thing has two complete seating configurations. He can put one in. I saw them change the other day, and it seats 10 people, 11 people, count the pilot. Or you can take those out and put in the plush seats with the bar, and then it only seats about seven or eight. But go anyway, first class.
Let's go back, Marv. Some of your thoughts about Fairbanks and changes in the city.
I don't know. I'm afraid I'm one of those old kind of fellows that when I come up here, I thought it was just a wonderful country, and I still do, but somehow progress is something that I think is for the 30-year-olds and under. I would more want to have it like it used to be.
Is there some aspect of the way it used to be, Marv, that you miss most?
Well, I think Tommy kind of hit it on the head when he first said when you walked down the street, you know, way back when, you knew everybody on the street, and you was hi this or hi Joe or hi Pete, you know. But anymore, it's, well, I got to get ahead of that guy because he's going to get there first, you know. And somehow this just doesn't seem quite natural for me.
Sonny?
I'm supposed to tell Barney that the caller is enjoying the reminiscences.
Who's Barney?
That's, I know who that is.
That's what you said you'd say.
Yeah, that was
one of the taxi dancers at the...
That's a good little story. We have this person that just called. I haven't talked to her in a long time. She used to be a tower operator. She retired here, I believe, last July. If I'm not mistaken, she'd been a tower operator for quite a while. I was flying, coming over from, I can't remember where I was flying, but I was down in the Manchuman area somewhere flying. I was pretty high up in the air. And talking on the radio, and her voice came over the radio, and I says, hi, is that you, Buttercup? says, that's me, Barney. There was a radio for everybody to listen to, and that's how that all started. This a long time ago.
This isn't too fair a question, but I always ask every time we have pilots and mechanics on. First off, by whatever standard you consider good, and everybody's got a different standard, present company accepted, who was best pilot you ever knew in Alaska?
Well, I think the you're asking me. I think the best pilot that I learned from a technical point of view and flying him is Holly Evans. You know, he's a Fairmax Air.
What do you think makes him that?
He's just a natural flyer. There's no question about it. I flew with him for 10 years. He's a good one.
What is it that that you would say that Holly knows that though that really makes him stand out in your mind?
Well, that's hard to say. This is a real pro. You know what I mean? It's hard to say. It's this does a good job every time. I guess that's the name of it.
Who's your pick, Mark?
I don't know. I hadn't thought too much about it from a pilot standpoint. I was thinking more in terms of mechanics and Jim Hutchison and Ernie Hubbard and Eldred Quam or some of the boys and names that are still here and come to my mind as far as the mechanical end of it is concerned. I hadn't really thought about it much in terms of pilot.
Yeah, they just named the Adult Career Development Center after Hutch.
Yeah.
What would you rank first as a plane that was really put together that you really like to work on?
Probably a J3 Cub.
That's simple. There ought to be something before that. No, actually, the airplanes that we're using now, the Aero Commander, as far as being put together, are one of the best, and I like working on them.
What was your favorite plane, or is?
Well, the one I enjoy flying the most, well, actually, over the years, I think Cessna 180. If you're getting down to basic bush flying and an airplane that really gets with it, 180 is pretty tough to beat. I'm talking about an airplane that's been around for less than 21 years now. They're still building them.
Well, I'm not a pilot, of course, and cars, I don't like any of them now very well. I just don't think they're built as well. For whatever reason, and so I have older model cars that stand out as favorites. Can the same be said of planes? Are new planes at all lesser built than the old ones?
The old ones, of course, were built very stout. They're a lot heavier than they were required to be, so that their performance was not as good as they are now. It's pretty hard to beat a modern airplane. It's just, for the power that they use and the speed they get, very difficult to beat a modern airplane. Now, for being rugged, for sandbar work, or where a plane's really working hard out in bad places, those old-time airplanes, the Pilgrims and stuff, pretty tough to beat if the old-timers worked on.
Let's turn around a bit, Marv. What was a plane or an engine that you just never could grasp, or wasn't there one? What was a mistake as a plane?
I think it's everyone that come along. You don't grasp something on it.
A plane at the other end of the scale that probably shouldn't have been.
I think Howard Hughes.
That's a real tough one.
I think Howard Hughes built one, didn't he?
But you know something, it's real remarkable, but they say what they want about. Marv's been around a long time, but I've been flying behind his airplane and worked for a long, long time before he ever come to our company, and I have, our company, so far, we haven't had one quit yet. I mean, that's quite remarkable concerning that in the last 5 or 6 years we've flown over 50,000 hours in our air taxi work. We never have an engine just outright, from a mechanical point of view, where a mechanic could have prevented it not giving us a problem.
Tommy, we're at the wires. Is there something we left out we should have tossed in, like we have a minute?
Mm-hmm.
Do you see anything there?
Oh, no. I'd like to see something to pilots around here, especially the private pilots that fly for fun and the fuel shortages and everything. I think that there possibly will be a slight cutback in fuel, but I don't think it'd be too bad. Another thing that I'd like to have them do is they should go to the FAA and get their recurrent flight checks. You'll check the problems they have. You'll notice the air taxi operators around Fairbanks, very seldom ever hear them having a problem with an airplane, but it's always the fellow that owns his own airplane that doesn't get the experience in the flight checks. Now, you take the crews and Air North here and another air taxi too. Every 6 months, we have to go through a complete flight check on equipment and instruments and things. And we're flying people, and then you get the people on their own airplane, you don't have to get checked at all. And the FAA gives us free gratis. You know, they come over with a legal airplane, they can get an expert to go with them and just get the rough edges off so that they're much safer to fly with. You know, get their capabilities up a little bit.
Sonny, you had something to toss in fast before we split?
The caller said we didn't go far enough into that accident in the power pole. It was a structural failure of some type that, in the caller's opinion, is almost always fatal to the pilot, and that it's the most miraculous thing he's ever witnessed.
Somebody was there watching?
Yeah, there's a lot of people watching that one, yeah.
Tommy Olson, I want to thank you very much for being here this evening. Marv Jones, Stu Rothman. Sonny, thank you very much. As for now, enough.